This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's a holiday cheer that will be spread within the city of Crown Point, in particular to help some families that need some help this time of year. We're talking about the Adopt-A-Family program, which is being started back up again by the city. With us to talk about it today, we have Diana Bossy. She is the entertainment superintendent for the city of Crown Point. Diana, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, if you will, tell us about the program. How long has Adopt-A-Family program been in operation? And I know this is a joint cooperative venture between the City of Crown Point and the School Corporation.
Correct. It has been going on for approximately 14 years since Mary Rand came into office. And this is a program that we like to work with the schools. The schools partner with us. They do food drives. They do coin wars. To help raise money for the program, and in turn we use that money to provide assistance for some of the children in those schools. So we partner with Timothy Ball Elementary School, Wheeler Middle School, and Taft Middle School. Not to say any other schools couldn't participate. Some of them have their own programs, but this one has been the program that has seemed to work for us in the past. Timothy Ball is doing a food drive for us this year. Wheeler has raised $250 and is also doing food. And then Taft does a coin war. So their CAF program, they see which age group or which class can raise the most money with their spare change. So it's been a great program. Every year they raise nearly $1,000 for us. So it really helps the program. And then that way we're able to provide some of their families. Usually it's 12 to 14, 15 families that we get, that we provide food baskets for, and we get clothes, coats, socks, hats, gloves. This year we have a lot of participating businesses that wanted to help out as well. We have I-4D Event Services that wants to do stockings for the families. Janus Fire Systems is doing food drives, and they also want to help out with toys. Union Home Mortgage wants to join in, as well as many of our residents who drop off. They've already dropped off toys. They've dropped off food. So we're already at a great start. We did some fundraising through Chipotle, through Culver's, and Tavern on Main. So we are already above $2,000 with just the assistance from those organizations. So we're looking to provide, you know, a great holiday for families in need.
Let me ask, how are the family members chosen for the program each year? Who makes the list together? Who makes the determination which families get the help?
That's done through the school. That way, you know, the schools have the best connection with those families and know who needs help. So we rely on the schools to provide us those families. And then it's up to them to choose whether or not they want to participate. So I reach out to them by a letter in the mail with forms to fill out, just telling us what the kids are looking for. And then that's what we use to get the kids what they're, you know, what they need. So we ask them to give us their sizes and what their, you know, what their specific needs are, and then a couple of wish list items, too.
Have you gotten any feedback from any of the family members after the annual drive is over, before the next one is underway?
Yes, the families are always so grateful. They really appreciate the help. Sometimes, you know, this time of year can be difficult for many. So they're always very appreciative with what we've been able to provide for them.
And, of course, the pandemic isn't helping matters, especially not this year. And I'm sure it was even the case last year, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
What, if anybody's still interested in being able to support the families, is there a deadline or that you want to try to reach, or the program has set up to reach here before Christmas, certainly?
We are still taking, we'll be collecting food at Bulldog Park in our vestibule for the ice rink. So we'll be collecting food. And then December 10th would be the deadline. If anybody would like to make monetary donations, they can do so at either the mayor's office or at the parks office on the second floor at Bulldog Park.
Now, as we talk here on this Wednesday for this particular Adopt-A-Family program year, is there anything else that's coming up in the city of Crown Point that we should mention as well here that will help other people or certainly help organizations through the holidays?
We have a lot of great events going on. Mm-hmm. This Friday, we have our winter market that will be taking place at the Sparta Dome from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a Black Friday shopping day, so people can come on out. We have a variety of vendors that have everything from clothing to popcorn to jewelry, body lotions, things like that, so you can get your holiday shopping started early. And then we will kick off the holiday season on Friday night at 5 p.m. on the east side of the courthouse with our tree lighting ceremony. And at 5:45, we'll move down and we will do the tank lighting ceremony as well. All of that is happening on Friday. And then Saturday morning at 10 a.m., Santa is going to arrive at the Point Plaza. He'll be joining us by helicopter. So if the Lake County Sheriff's Department has been kind enough to deliver Santa to us on Saturday at 10 a.m. So people can come out, they can see that. And then Santa and Mrs. Claus will be in the courthouse and the lower level available for photos every Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Do you get the feeling, Diana, that this year is going to be very special because there'll be more people that will want to participate, more people that want to be out there for the for all the ceremonies, especially outdoors?
Absolutely. I definitely feel like people are feeling the holiday spirit and really want to support the small businesses. They want to shop local, and they definitely want to be out and be part of the community.
Well, it's good to hear, and the best of to all the families that are participating in the Adopt-A-Family program this year. We hope that they get all their wishes filled and that folks in the area help out and be sure to get the food collected together and delivered, so and the monetary donations as well, too, which can be done, as you mentioned, there at City Hall. Dinah, thank you very much for giving us an update on not only the Adopt-A-Family program for 2021, but all the other programs that are getting underway here with the City of Crown Point. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dinah Bossy is the entertainment superintendent for the City of Crown Point.
With the holidays just around the corner, it's time to remind our children of the benefits of connecting with others through acts of kindness and giving. Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman was with us recently to talk about the ways that youngsters can reap some big rewards for themselves, as well as gain confidence and social networking skills.
We know that even toddlers, young kids, show this inclination to help others. When they see someone in need, they'll lean in. And we know that that's part of our makeup as individuals and as humans. That being said, with everything having to do with the pandemic, obviously we've turned inward a bit, right? Within our families and our small circles, and our circles sometimes have gotten a little smaller. But as we're looking forward and as things become safer to look outward, it's important that we remind ourselves and our kids and that we model that it's important to be part of our communities and to look at how we can help those around us who might need a little more help or support.
Is it one of these opportunities that come up that maybe not necessarily from cradle, but pretty soon, I'm at a very young age, that children should be able to learn about these pro-social behaviors?
Absolutely. And again, it's the old idea of sharing, right? We talk to kids about share your toys, share your food, but then that can go beyond, you know, how do we share our time? How do we share things that we might not need anymore, such as, you know, and these don't have to be really complex interactions, but it can be donating food or sorting through, having your child help sort out their clothes that they've outgrown and then driving over and donating those to someplace that can put them to good use. So again, it's modeling, teaching, and then reaping the actual benefits. There are huge benefits to kindness, gratitude, and service to others.
Now, we've done this before where we kind of break things down by way of age groups. Let's do so with this idea as well, too. What kind of age-specific ideas do you have that we should cultivate the practice of service and giving?
Right. So elementary students, and you're right, scaffolding by age groups is always a good idea. And accommodating where they're at and meeting them where they're at. So elementary students, you know, they really start service projects thinking about maybe there's an after-school program, the Scouts, maybe there's something at their faith-based organization where they can learn some of those acts of kindness and giving and projects. And then, you know, when you talk to middle schoolers, you can talk to them about how they're situated in their community and their place in contributing and civic engagement. You can start talking about what that looks for, you know, what that looks like for them. And then also, what are some direct paths for them to have impact? Mm-hmm. We don't want kids of any age to think it's too big of an issue and there's nothing they can do about it. We want to break it down so that they're contributing. And then by high school, they can really lean into the complex problems in society and in their neighborhood, in our state, and even globally, and talk to them about ways they can help envision and be part of big solutions.
And I know by high school age, we've been surprised and pleased, at least, that some high schoolers are really able to understand some of these issues and can come up with some really good ideas to contribute, to be sure. And it's very important. I know during the month of November, it's National Philanthropy Month. So it's great. I got an opportunity to kind of combine it with the holidays and bring these ideas up, right?
Absolutely. So thinking about how do we want to contribute, this is the time of year. You know, we talk about what we're thankful for, but also thinking about what things and gifts and supports we may have that others might not be able to engage in or have at hand. So how do we help make sure that that thankfulness ripples out beyond our family? You know, one of the things that we didn't touch on that I'm glad you brought up, you know, sometimes kids, you know, oftentimes, I would say maybe even most of the time, they come up with new ideas or approaches that we have, as adults, haven't seen or haven't thought of. So it's really important that we engage them in the conversation and talk to them about what's of interest to them, what's on their mind, how would they like to show up and contribute in the community. Make sure they have a voice and ownership in their commitment.
Mm-hmm. What does some of the research show that these are important traits that young people should pick up from grown-ups that help them along so that they're able to become stronger and better adults when they grow up further?
Absolutely. So a few of them, just to run through them pretty quickly, is there's an increased level of happiness, caring, and emotional well-being. That acts of kindness, when performed by kids, actually form connections and that are associated with increased happiness. And so we know that there's been some challenges to that throughout the pandemic. So anything we can do to bring happiness to our kids and ourselves is a positive thing. There's also a greater sense of belonging and improved self-esteem, but there's actually a rush of endorphins that are related to helping others, and that can lead to a sense of pride, optimism, self-worth. There's improved health and reduced stress. There's increased feelings of gratitude. There's actually better concentration, which is a fascinating one to me, that kindness is actually connected with increased positivity and serotonin levels. And so that can result in better sleep, memory, and learning patterns.
I understand, too, that besides what adults can do themselves to help youngsters, they can rely on some very good community organizations to help teach them these things.
100%. Do not think that we have to go out and create new service projects. There are incredible organizations across every community. So think about, you know, is your food bank doing something? Is your after-school program doing something? Is there a food drive within your school? You know, so identifying those organizations that have missions and visions that are important to you and your family, and then leaning into those. You do not have to create it from scratch.
That's Tammy Silverman, the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. If a judge decides that someone is unable to make their own decisions, the person can be placed under a court-appointed guardianship, also known as a conservatorship. Some states allow less restrictive alternatives, but as Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett tells us, many are not aware of those options.
When Nick Klaus was 18, he got into a car accident. The brain injuries caused severe memory loss, headaches, and insomnia. His mom and stepdad went to a judge and requested to be his legal guardian. They said it would be temporary. Now, a decade later, Klaus still feels the effects of the injury. But overall, he's doing well. He's married. He has a daughter. He works as a forklift operator in northern Indiana. But up until a few months ago, every single purchase and decision he made had to be approved by his mom and stepdad. He recently testified at a U.S. Senate hearing on predatory guardianships.
In December 2016, I became a father, but in many ways, my parents still treated me like a child. I had no control over my paychecks. I earned and had to get permission from my stepfather to buy diapers and formula for my daughter.
Klaus says he even had to get his parents' permission to marry his wife. Klaus wanted out of the guardianship, but to do so, he would have needed to hire a lawyer. This would require his parents' permission as well. And he tells me they weren't interested.
They had 100% control over my life, and I just didn't have any say in what I did or anything.
We reached out to the lawyer representing Klaus's parents and did not hear back. Guardianships are most often used for the elderly, people with disabilities, or serious mental illness. The data is sparse, but AARP estimates about 1.3 million adults in the U.S. are in legal guardianships. In 2019, Indiana joined a handful of other states, including Delaware, Texas, and Wisconsin, to pass a law requiring judges to consider less restrictive alternatives to guardianships. One example is known as supported decision-making. Robert Dinnerstein heads the Disability Rights Law Clinic at American University in D.C.
Many of us would run important decisions by other people in our lives who are important to us, family, friends, and we don't think anything of that. If you're that person, you get to decide who to talk to. You get to decide whether to listen to the advice, and nobody is sort of stepping in your shoes.
In other words, people in these arrangements have the final say, unlike in a guardianship. Dinnerstein says the problem is often no one's checking to make sure judges are offering these alternatives. This leaves people with disabilities vulnerable to exploitation. It matters because once a person is in a guardianship, it is really hard to get out. Dinnerstein says the case involving Britney Spears highlights this really well.
It's like Hotel California. Once a guardian is appointed, even if circumstances change where you no longer think you need it, it's really hard to get courts to restore your capacity.
Justin Schrock is an attorney with Indiana Disability Rights. He represented Nick Klaus to finally terminate his guardianship. He says the new state law is intended to protect people, but on the ground, not much has changed.
You know, I see guardianship petitions that are still filed today that don't even mention whether less restrictive alternatives have been assessed in any way. That has been a minimum requirement since July 1st of 2019.
Shortly after Klaus's guardianship was terminated, he took his wife and daughter out for dinner.
And I didn't have to worry about, like, my card getting declined, or I bought my daughter a big piece of chocolate cake. That made me feel good that I could just kind of splurge a little bit.
Advocates for people with disabilities say there are circumstances that warrant a guardianship, but there needs to be oversight and a high bar for placing a person into such a restrictive legal arrangement. I'm Carter Barrett, Side Effects Public Media.
According to the Indiana Arts Commission, more than 100 Hoosier artists are participating in the annual On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Accelerator. It's a special program for artists and creative professionals all across the state, and they take advantage of local partnerships, which in our case includes South Shore Arts. Let's find out more about the program. Paige Sharp is the Deputy Director of Programs for the Indiana Arts Commission. And Paige, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Will you tell us a little bit more about the annual On-Ramp Accelerator, what it's all about, and in particular about the local partnerships that we're working with the IAC?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. So the On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Program is an accelerator program, but it's really unique. So it has a three-day intensive entrepreneurship course where the individuals who are selected to participate will come together in person, and they learn the key entrepreneurship skills, like what do you do, who do you serve, what do you need, what does it cost, and how will you monetize it. So these are basically core things that any entrepreneur needs to learn. But the uniqueness of the creative sector is then they come together from the variety of disciplines that they represent. Could be a musician, could be a graphic designer, a fashion designer, a writer. They come together and they're like, oh my gosh, I've found my people. So they go through these 3 days of training. But what's really cool is after that, then they can get a fellowship of $2,000 to take what they learned and put it into action to impact their creative career. So that goes along for like the year following that on-ramp program. So it's both training as well as funding to pursue their really entrepreneurship pursuits. Mm-hmm. So it's a really great, solid, and performance-based program. So we see outstanding results from those folks that do participate.
What would the IAC consider as being an arts-based small business? Is there, I guess you don't think of an artist being a small business person, but I guess they are in a way, especially if they are either doing their own artwork or if they're producing art to be shown in a gallery or for purchase, for that matter, I guess. So they, I guess, would have to be considered a small business because you're not talking about a room full of people involved in such a business. Usually it's only one person, maybe a couple people, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it is, you know, just like oftentimes when we think about an artist, we think visual art. You know, we forget that there are musicians and writers out there. But absolutely, the other part is, oh, yeah, I don't even think about them being a small business. But there's a lot of folks out there who are making quite a bit of money off of their creativity. And that can be, you know, example could be John Green, who's a, you know, internationally known novelist from Indiana. Mm-hmm. That is a creative discipline. It's writing. But there's also artists in the state of Indiana that draw for Marvel, for example. But they live here in Indiana because they don't have to be in California. They can just, you know, email their stuff. So it's fashion designers. It's folks that are selling stuff on Etsy. It's folks that are, you know, potters or wanting to make part of their living, you know, selling pottery. So they are very much a big part of the fabric of our state in terms of entrepreneurship. And interestingly, we have almost three times the national average of creative entrepreneurs in Indiana compared to nationally.
Wow.
So nationally, there's a certain amount, almost three times that we see that in Indiana. Cost of living is low here, so maybe that's part of it. But the creatives can be very vibrant and make a good living. Maybe not necessarily entirely from what they do as creatives, but what we would qualify as a portfolio career. Mm-hmm. But we do see a lot of artists out there. And it can be a little bit of the non-traditional section. So we can see, like, there's Janice Motorcycles. You know, that's an artist. He's a designer. He designed motorcycles. Now he does very well. I think he has over 50 employees. So while that person didn't go through our program, that's somebody that we'd bring into the program, for example, to highlight if somebody's successful, so that the folks in the program can learn from somebody who's being successful out there that they could potentially model.
Now, I don't know if there are any in Indiana other than the only one I can think of in particular would be like the Pause Studio that's up in the Muncie area that produces the Garfield comic strips and all of the products for the Garfield universe up there. But I'm sure there are other businesses that are similar to it across the state that for example, animation studios. You don't have to be all in Hollywood or on the West Coast to be able to do that because everything can be done online now. And so I suppose a small business like that could reside in Indiana just as well as any place else, right?
Absolutely, and they do. And, you know, there's one thing that we do see, you know, you've got photography studios. Photographers are a huge part of the creative sector in the state of Indiana. There's many of them out there. But, yeah, absolutely. We have a stop animation artist, Chris Sixby. He works internationally, you know, and he does all this stuff out of his studio in, and I think not the Muncie area, but like Greenfield or something. Yeah, Greenfield.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, and up in the Gary area, we're starting to see interest in doing, you know, publishing. So our publishing sector is kind of a, you know, really changed because everything's online. Well, people are now interested in sort of like actual hand-printed things. So that's coming back to life, too. So we're starting to see people make a living off of, say, screen printing, or letterpress as well in Lake Goshen and emerging in the Gary area, too.
We're talking with Paige Sharp, who's the Deputy Director of Programs for the Indiana Arts Commission. The Arts Commission has been partnering with the Indiana Small Business Development Center in creating a program which is called it's an annual program called On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Accelerator. Now, from the research that you all have done in past programs, how have the alumni who've been involved in this program done as far as being able to survive as entrepreneurs, maybe compared to others that haven't been?
What was really interesting when we did research to find out in terms of the impact of COVID on artists, certainly 95% of artists across the entire country were impacted by COVID.
Yeah.
But comparatively, when looking at the research data of the on-ramp graduates, they'd actually fared better through COVID than the artist cohorts who had not been in that program. So we could see that what they learned was really critical to sustainability. So they learned how to save money. They learned how to allocate those resources and what really needs to be charged in order to maintain a creative career. So we see a huge growth certainly after the workshop, but we see maintained growth and understanding of what they learned up after a year even of going through the program, which is really incredible. So it's very strong, and it helps increase the resilience of the artists in our state. So we're really proud to see that long-term benefit.
Now, what did the entrepreneurs that are involved in the program this year get? They put in their applications or their proposals, I guess, for a fellowship. Are they able to be able to get the fellowship and use that in whatever they need to learn to become very successful business people? And what's the next step that, that they'll go through now once they finish up the program?
Yeah. Oh, my. So right now they submitted a fellowship application. So we asked them, what are you going to do? What did you learn and what are you going to do with these funds to help deepen your creative practice? Some creatives are asking for funding for equipment so that they can scale up their business. But then we also need to know, okay, well, you're going to get this. Then what are you going to do as a result? How is that going to increase your business? Now, it's very different for each individual. Some have already developed partnerships with, say, a school, and that they're going to be working with the school to create, a book based, where, they collaboratively worked to produce something. The projects are very different. Everybody has their own way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
It could be additional training. Like they want to learn more information about their craft. It could be that they're going to travel somewhere and work with a specific artist on something. At the end of the day, they're going to be going through a panel process here in the next couple weeks. So a panel of folks who are sort of field experts, creative entrepreneurs, are going to review those applications. So where they see that it could be strengthened in certain areas, they will provide that input. So it's really great. Like, here has a wonderful idea. But as you know, it's always really helpful to get additional input from other super smart people who are like, oh, that's a great idea. And then these creatives can incorporate that added wisdom. So when they do implement their project over the next year, it has a higher percentage rate of success. So that's the next step. We're going to go through that panel process and get that feedback. And then they're going to go through contract, and then they're going to start their fellowship over the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to do a shout out to Sam Love and who's a creative who went through our program and really spearheaded the training effort in Northwest Indiana, where they hosted it in Munster. And he and his team did a great job. South Shore Arts, Michael Borstein, and then Jason Williams, also a partner on that project. So I think we had about 14 folks go through that, video artists and writers, graphic designers, all individually are going to do some pretty amazing projects that you can learn more about on our website. Just queuing up on ramp to learn more about the folks that went through the program in your area,
mm-hmm.
as well as information about what they do here in the future.
Well, it's great to hear. We've had the opportunity to talk with Sam Love in the past about his projects in particular there in Gary. So it's nice to see that he's involved in that. And obviously, by word of mouth and talking with other creative people here in Northwest India, they've all gotten involved in it. As we mentioned earlier in the conversation, that South Shore Arts is one of the partners that the Indiana Arts Commission has been working with on this. This program, you say, is basically a year long, I guess, for this year in particular. Is there any plans for expansion beyond that, or is this just going to be a continual program?
So we do plan on opening up an opportunity for folks to participate in OnRamp. The applications will go live in a couple weeks here. And then the program, the workshop, will be actually this year. It'll be in Noblesville in May of 2022. Mm-hmm. Anybody's welcome that's a creative that's interested in applying to that program. They can just go to our website and learn about it, or sign up for our newsletter and get information that way. The program is entirely free, but it is applications that are evaluated to become part of the program. I highly encourage anybody to go through it if they want to learn more and maybe intersect the STAM and some of the folks over at South Shore Arts, if they want a more personal journey into understanding. There's a lot of creativity up in Northwest Indiana. I was so impressed and so proud of the folks living there and also the pride that they have for their communities. So I would love to see participation from the folks up north. It would be great to continue to serve that area as well in our program that we have opening up here in a short time.
So folks can contact South Shore Arts up here in Munster if they'd like more information, or they can reach you folks directly down at the Indiana Arts Commission, right?
Yeah, I just suggest contacting the Indiana Arts Commission first and foremost, and then I can refer them to folks if they want a more direct understanding of, folks who went through the program. But mm-hmm. absolutely, contact the Indiana Arts Commission. They're more than welcome to contact me. And those guidelines and the application will be live in 2 weeks.
That's great. Paige Sharp is the Deputy Director of Programs for the Indiana Arts Commission and the Indiana Arts Commission, working with the Indiana Small Business Development Center to come up with the continuation of the annual OnRamp Creative Entrepreneur Accelerator. It helps artists and creative professionals all around the state through the local partnerships that we mentioned, the South Shore Arts in particular up here, to help get them off to a good start to be solid entrepreneurs and help not only develop their skills as artists, as well as business people. And thank you very much, Paige, for the information, and hope the program goes well this year.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. Because of the holidays, I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us. Back with you on Monday.